Death Spiral, the official anime podcast of the international narco-terrorist state. We are advising the narco-terrorists about anime, which ones are good, which ones are bad, why they're flying the One Piece flag.
First you get the money, then you get the power, then you get the waifus.
Yeah, and yeah. We are in the street racing division, so we've been hanging out with Vin Diesel, getting a lot of tips. I've been driving this Nissan Skyline GTR, and guess what anime character I've put on the hood of my Nissan Skyline GTR?
Is it Bochy? Bochy from Bochy the Rock?
Nope.
No? Okay.
Nope.
All right. Is it Asuka from Evangelion?
No, but popular option.
Yeah, I figure.
A lot of people driving around with Ava Rap.
Gosh. All right. I'm going to take a wild guess. I'm going to take a wild one on here. And
go for it.
Yeah, it's probably not right, but I want bonus points if it is. Is it Lugosi from Beastars?
No, I have not ever seen a Lugosi rap. That is far afield.
You could be the first one.
I could.
You could be the first one.
I could. Actually, I was designing my own Ryuoki rap because nobody's done that yet.
Sure. Okay. Obviously.
Because there's a dearth of Tenshi Muyo raps in the custom street racing car scene. You very rarely see them.
Tenshi's a boomer anime now. It's for...
Yeah, it is a little older. I mean, right now...
It's for the olds.
When you look across the scene, I mean, mostly you're seeing Mikus. You're seeing 02 a lot. That's
which
like
I don't
all
get,
up in there.
You know, maybe that's good for some people. I do not get the appeal of Darling in the Franxx. I tried watching a couple episodes and I don't get it. It didn't resonate with me, but you know, I still
you don't
love
get
Trigger.
Why the sexy anime girl show is attracting attention.
No, like I get that,
you
but
don't
it's
get
like,
it.
Is that it? Is that it?
Is kinda, that it? It kind of is. I mean, that really is it with most anime and especially anime raps. And I, unfortunately sure. That's true. Also true for my Skyline, which is adorned with, of course, Yumeko Jibami, and it's got a full Yumeko rap theme on it.
That's good. That's a pretty good one.
And so when I race for pinks, you can really feel the energy. I really felt like this is simpatico.
You've got that horny, murderous intent kind of vibe going on.
Yeah.
So I could see why Yumeko was a obvious choice there.
Yeah, I mean, look, she's gambling huge amounts of like straight cash, but like, you know, a $30,000 to $50,000 piece of machinery is a bet that I think would excite Yumeko like quite a lot, especially when it's so arbitrary, as in a tenth of a second across a finish line. Sometimes that's the distinction there. I think she would approve.
Okay, hear me out. It's the final episode of the Netflix Kakeguri spinoff. What do they call it?
Sure.
Bet. That was
bet.
What they called
it's
it.
Called Bet.
Yeah. Yeah,
because it's Gen Z. Bet.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Final episode. You know, Yumeko finally discovered who set off the insidious murder plot that killed her father, and she's got to go undercover now in a car thief ring in Southern California. She steps out, and who's there?
Don't say Paul Walker.
Vinny D and the whole family.
Okay. Good.
I was going to say Vinny D. Vinny D.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Paul is not going to be there.
Well, no. Paul Walker in life was no longer allowed around 17-year-olds.
I mean, look, I would be overjoyed. Frankly, I think she would fit right in with the crew. She's obviously a thrill seeker. Right.
Mm-hmm.
She's a criminal for sure. Nowhere else to go, you know, in polite society. Obviously, she loves betting. That's like her whole thing. So like street races are just like they are adjacent to her life already.
Yeah, it's tangential. There's already a connection.
Yeah, and street racing is also filled with rich kids, because, like I said, these things are not cheap. They're fucking expensive.
So the Fast and the Furious, Kakegurui, again, initial D, triple crossover. That's definitely going to happen. That's my pitch. Netflix, if you're listening, you know where to find me. You've been getting my letters. I know you have. I delivered them myself. Hit me up. I've got ideas.
Well, and I don't want to go all the way back and revisit this, but I did write a spec script for a new initial D that fixes a lot of the problems. If you let me in there, I would fix all of it. It would come out the other side spanking clean, I promise you. Somebody give me a fucking chance here. I will fix Initial D.
We'll fix it.
And I love Initial D. I love it.
Okay.
Initial D kicks ass.
Okay. All right. Hey, I want to back up a little bit. I want to go back, and I want to get your opinion, because you've been, for some reason, getting very into the whole car thing recently. I don't get it, but to each their own. You've been playing a lot of Forza.
It's the easiest fucking thing in the world. It is racing. Racing is exciting.
Uh-huh.
Everybody instinctively understands
this. So they say. I see, I hit my head when I was in middle school, and that part of my brain that feels like joy and excitement and anticipation just doesn't work anymore. So I don't get it. But to each their own.
You don't understand Sonic? He's got to go fast.
No, I don't. Sonic is actually, you know, I have no connection to him. It's like a blank slate, you know? Remember Westworld, when you showed the hosts like a picture of the outside world and they say that doesn't look like anything? That's me with Sonic. He doesn't register to me, and he's actually the worst video game mascot. It's been long enough.
This is like telling someone you don't have like an inner monologue, or you can't rotate a cube. It's like, oh no, there's something wrong there.
I can draw clocks very well, though, so I've got that going for me.
Oh, great. Cool.
Yeah. No, I was going to ask you, okay, back to the whole Lugosi rap thing. What car would you put him on?
Lugosi?
Yeah.
Gee, I don't know. Like, I'm thinking something. It can't be Italian. It's too obvious to do Japanese, you know.
Wait, why can't it be Italian?
Because Italians are spicy, and Lugosi is like a loser. He's
but
like
Lupin,
a dumpy.
Lupin drove Italian.
Well, Lupin and Lugosi are completely opposite characters. If you want a dour car, it's not going to be Italian. It's not going to be American. It's not going to be French. It's not going to be, well, German, maybe. But I'm leaning towards like Volvo, you know, because they're a little dour. So like maybe a Volvo 242 Turbo.
Okay. All
like
right.
That's a car that can race. It can rally. Because like Lugosi does have claws, and he like, for some reason, that show turns into like a fighting show. So he's got like juice. But he's still like a mopey asshole. And I feel like the grayness of Volvo in general, like, really fits him. I mean, not just because he's literally gray, but like also he has a gray personality. He's a gray man.
He's a.
So like I think a Volvo actually would fit him very well.
Just kind of like a low key stock silver kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I can see that.
I wish I remember the antler guy, but like, you know, he's a hard charger for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So he would be like Italian or American because he's spicy. He likes to run fast. You know, a deer is like a sprinter, you know. So like, you know, something like a Lambo would probably, because he's also a rich kid. So like a Lambo really fits really well there.
Yeah, you know, supercar kind of is the right vibe. I was kind of thinking more of like the elitist kind of thing.
Yeah, I was thinking like a Berlinetti, you know, the Berlinetti. It's like real slick. It's a little bit of an older car. It's got less low. It's a lower profile than like a supercar, like a Maserati or whatever, you know. But like, it's still very obviously like high end sport, and it just goes. It's slick like him, because he's also like, he wants to be like an underworld dude. I wish I remember his name, but I do not at all.
Yeah, Deer Guy. From Beastars. Beloved Deer Guy.
If only he had some kind of like, if he was like, if he had a red theme, like he was he was Rudolph or something, he would really fit, like a Ferrari, you know?
Yo, why didn't I think of that crossover sooner? They could do a Beastars Santa crossover with a fighting Rudolph guy.
I know. That is the pivot, isn't it? Like, yeah, that's right there. That,
yeah. Yo, holiday season's coming right up. Hey, Itagaki, hit me up. I've got ideas.
Paru Itagaki. Not the other one. We already know where Baki's going for Christmas. It's to kidnap the president.
Wait, the current president? Which one? What year is Baki taking place in right now?
Well, Baki has been 18 for like the last 20 years or so because he does kidnap George W. Bush. So I guess if he was kidnapping down the years, yeah, he would eventually get to Trump too.
Yeah. Well, then, you know, his dad, Yujiro, he kidnapped Obama that one time.
Yeah, a lot of presidents getting kidnapped.
It's kind of a recurring theme.
It's one of my favorite things about Baki in general is how many presidents get kidnapped. And not to any terrorist ends, I do have to stress, they do it pretty much for fun.
No, it's a funny joke. I get it. I'm laughing.
And of course, my favorite manga Trump is from Virgin Extinction Island, where he declares the U.S. military will prevent all Japanese people from spreading the Virgin Island disease.
Jesus Christ.
It's really good. You should. I'm sure I've shown you that caption, but like,
yeah, no,
that
you
panel
have.
From
I know
that, it's so
about.
Funny. It's so fucking funny. Oh, man. It's a really good one. If you can still stomach even just looking at that guy, like, it is a very funny drawing of him.
It turns out that I can't, actually. I cannot stomach it.
No, you're not alone.
Yeah.
He is sort of a repulsive crypt keeper.
Well, the crypt keeper at least had, like, you know, he had a little bit of wit about him. The crypt keeper understood the value of humor. Trump seems
very funny guy. No, Trump is funny. I mean, look, we could say all kinds of things about it, but he is a funny dude. Yeah.
But he's not being funny on purpose. At least I don't think he is. You know?
No, I don't think so. I think he's just naturally
funny. I think he's not a funny dude. He is a fundamentally unserious person, which is funny a lot of the times. Like, that is comedy gold. He just happens to be, you know, destroying society, like, around him as he does it. Which, you know, we're already here. Let's have a laugh at least.
Okay, we got to get off this.
I know. I'm going dark here. Hey, let's get back to anime. You watched any anime this week?
Anime. Well, it's funny you ask, not just because this is an anime podcast, but because I did something kind of unique this week.
Oh,
I watched a live adaptation of a manga that I haven't read. I think this is the first time this has ever happened.
Okay, interesting. So what was it? Was it a Japanese production, or is this what did
no,
you
it was,
watch?
Yeah, it was very much a Japanese production.
Okay, all right. Well, good start then. All right, let's keep it on course.
Now, I did skip Netflix's last Rurouni Kenshin entry just because, man, I felt real bad. That felt real bad.
Well, you know,
could not bring myself to do it.
Yeah, I don't need my subscription dollars to be one of those 4,000.
Yeah, it's not great. But the much hyped Last Samurai Standing was released last week at some point, and I did watch it. And it's very easy to watch because it is very brief.
I have heard a little bit of buzz about this. I haven't checked it out myself, but you watched it. So what's the deal?
Well, people were bafflingly describing this as a good replacement for Shogun.
Okay.
Which is not true at all. That's a absolutely bizarre and crazy thing to say.
Are they comparable? I don't know what this is about
at all,
but I know what Shogun is about.
It is not comparable to Shogun in any way. Let's be clear. Shogun is a historical drama about Japan.
Yeah, right.
This is a fucking battle action manga adaptation.
Okay, this is
the only thing they share is like almost sort of a time period, though even not that, because this is like firmly in the like pre-World War II, like modernization era. Uh-huh. And Shogun is not. Shogun is about just a little bit after, like, they begin trading with Portugal.
It's somewhere in, like, I want to say the late 1500s, 1600s area. Era,
yeah,
around there. But yes, it is right on the precipice of Portugal forcibly opening up trade routes to Japan to, you know, bring in missionaries.
Yes, and it's specifically grounded in a historical context that, for, you know, it's fictionalized, but it is mostly about things that kind of actually happened. Last Samurai Standing is set almost directly post-Civil War. During the period of disarmament, where swords had become illegal and they were disarming samurai across the country.
Mm-hmm.
This has crazy like ninjas and like super sword guys and like supernatural like bowmen and shit. So this is not like Shogun in any way. I kind of feel like people who say that shit, I'm not calling them racist, but like, come on, you guys. It's just two things set in Japan.
I think the same people saying that, you know, saying that this is a better replacement for Shogun are probably within the Venn diagram, you know, crossover of people who install like sexy schoolgirl uniform mods for Silent Hill F.
I don't know if I go that far. I feel like this is more of a normie problem. But I would say if you want a replacement for Shogun, it would probably be like a lateral move to a different historical drama.
Well, I mean, if you want a replacement for Shogun, the direct lateral move would be watching the miniseries from the 70s, you know, or
I was going to say something
that,
like,
it was based off of.
Yeah, no, that. But I was going to say something like, you know, Master and Commander. As another personal favorite, you know, a fictionalized historical, yeah, drama at about a very turbulent period of time.
I really like Master and Commander.
Yeah,
I really like
rules.
That movie.
It kicks ass.
I wish we had gotten 14 sequels like the books.
Yeah. I think I have almost an entire set of the books.
That's cool.
Yeah. There are so many of them. It's actually kind of weird that it didn't get turned into a long running series.
Well, you know, it came out right when like Pirates of the Caribbean was having its big explosion. So I think it got overshadowed for the much more bombastic option within the box.
Okay, well,
office.
this is actually great because Master Commander is to Pirates of the Caribbean what Shogun is to Last Samurai Standing.
I think I can totally follow that. I know exactly, yeah, what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and I mentioned Kenshin earlier because the main character in Last Samurai Standing is a bit of a Kenshin. He was whatever they call like a manslayer during the Civil War period where
A Batosai.
Yes, very much sort of a Batosai. He was a renowned swordsman who was considered one of the deadliest in Japan.
Okay.
He was sort of a mysterious figure who came from a sword school that most people don't know of because it's shrouded in mystery.
Yeah, you know, he's got like fiery red hair and he's got like a cross-shaped scar on his face.
Well,
you know,
he is
all the
more
standard
of a
stuff.
Regular guy. The big difference being like when he comes out the other side, he does what Kenshin could not, and he like does try to get rid of his sword, and he does stop using it completely, and he gets married and has kids. So kind of a better example than Kenshin, who is like a huge fucking hypocrite.
Sorry, it made me think of that old Tyler the Creator tweet, like, how is cyberbullying real? Just walk away. Like, just put the sword down. Just put the sword down. Like,
just don't use the sword, idiot.
Just stop stabbing people, dummy.
Yeah, he's fucking stupid. Kenshin's a dumb asshole. I'm sorry. Dude is like, I don't like sword fight anymore. And then he proceeds to sword fight for the last 20 years. Fucking dumb ass.
Isn't that all of them? You know, that's how gunslingers, the grizzled old retired gunslinger. I don't use that gun anymore. Well, he's literally using it to turn on his TV like in The Simpsons.
Yeah. Well, my man's, he does not do that. He is like fully on board with like being a dude.
He's committed.
Yeah. Until, okay. Cholera sweeps the nation and his kids get sick, which is not good.
No,
not a good thing.
That's why kids are a liability.
And it's hard to treat cholera if you're a very poor dude living in rural Japan. It's pretty difficult.
I mean, chances are it was like not super easy, even if you were like rich, you know. It sounds like just getting sick back then in general was, you know, not great.
Not great. Not great at all. But he enters a kind of secretive competition that he learns about through, like, flyers, which is a funny concept. Like, somebody is just passing out these things that are like, hey, former samurai, what do you think about one last rally? Come over and do a martial arts demonstration. And he's like, well, fuck it. Sure, why not?
I mean, that seems like an incredibly obvious trap. Like, why would he go to that?
I know, it's very dumb, the whole idea. But, you know, his kid has cholera. He's desperate. You know, people will do crazy things like that. They'll take risks.
So let's go to the secret last samurai standing competition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of where we jump in, and this is the part that kind of really makes it strange that I haven't read this, because this is so up my alley, because it does turn out to obviously be a death game. It's just a death game.
Yeah, it sounds like a death game.
Yeah, it's a death game.
Okay,
let's all be clear, this is a death game.
Well, I mean, is it just a tournament where they kill each other, or are there
not
like
a tournament? No, that's the thing, this is not a tournament, because that would be a different thing. That's tournament. You know, we're talking Yu Yu Hakusho is tournament. This is not a tournament.
Okay. All right.
This is a battle royale. This is death game shit. He enters this thing, which immediately turns out to be a death game. And like from second one, he's like, oh, fuck. Oh, man, I fucked up. I fucked up so bad. Oh, shit.
I shouldn't have done that.
Why did I do this? This is so dumb. And it is. It really is. And basically everybody involved is immediately like, wow, this was really stupid. Why did we do this? I cannot believe we fell for that.
Seriously, from a flyer, I cannot believe that they fell for that. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Very dumb. Very dumb, guys. But, you know, this is the twilight of the samurai, right? They've all been thrown to the wind. They consider themselves betrayed by the state, because obviously it was the samurai class that helped win and lose the civil war, right?
Sure.
So everybody's disgruntled and they decide, hey, fuck it, if I can use my sword to like kill people, I guess that's not so bad, because I guess that's like something that samurai are really invested in, is like hacking people up with a sword.
Well,
it's like kind of their whole deal.
You know, it's one of those privileges where it's kind of like a use it or lose it situation. So, you know, if you are part of an overclass that is given broad authority to just hack and slash, you know, anyone below you at discrimination, you know, yeah, go for it. Use it while you can.
Yeah.
Because obviously,
Obviously,
you know, they've ended up in this situation where they're being hunted down by the state and forced into death games.
Yeah, it's you can imagine why they'd be pissed. Now, this is where it gets complicated, because I do have a lot of complicated feelings about this. This is a very easy concept to ruin, because you could very easily just turn it into like endless boring battles where people just sword fight. And there's like flimsy cardboard characters and like not a lot of like intrigue or action. You know, we've seen a million of these things, right?
Yeah.
There's a mountain of like really boring action anime, because there's no meat on the bone. But they do a couple of very smart things with this. One of them being, our main character immediately teams up with another character who's entire deal is investigating the death game, which is something you don't always see. It's not the most uncommon thing, but for a lot of death games, usually people would just play.
Yeah.
And then they speculate.
Oftentimes the death game is being organized either by very influential people, you know, in terms of money and connections in the state, or sometimes just by the state itself. So having someone from the outside investigating, that does, you know, kind of put it in an uncommon spin on it.
Yeah. And he's very actively investigating instead of a bunch of people like in a lot of death games standing around going like, gee, I wonder who's behind this. And the show makes clear we don't have to do that either, because it is immediately also revealed that it is like the four Zaibatsu who are kind of running the little bit kind of running the game. They're mostly like just rich investors and spectators.
Oh, so you mean it's rich people. It's rich people putting it on is the rich death people, game.
But again, there are wrinkles here that I find interesting, because it very early on, you know, it tells us that these Zaibatsu leaders, presidents of these companies, are like, they've turned this into a horse racing situation, an Uma Musume situation, where they are making individual bets on like who's going to make the first gate, because this is also a race. This is a bit of a reference to like Samurai Marathon. Did you ever watch that one? I love that movie.
No, I haven't seen that.
It's great. It's about samurai marathoning. It's fucking great. It's fucking great.
Enough said.
But this has a component of that where not only are they battle royaling, but they have to secretly battle royale from one point of the country all the way to Tokyo. So they are passing through these checkpoints, and each checkpoint they have to have a certain amount of kills before they can proceed. So there's like levels to it, right?
This is, you know, extremely intricate, but at the same time seems very overly complicated for the purpose of just betting on people killing each other, right? It's, well, you know, for the time and era, it's not like they can broadcast these, you know, who's keeping track? How are they keeping a record here?
Well, they have a massive surveillance apparatus that is constantly reporting via telegraph. You didn't think of that, did you?
Okay, no, I forgot about
telegraph.
I forgot about telegraphs.
You forgot about the telegraph.
I always forget about telegraphs. It's my one weakness.
You know, when you say Last Samurai Standing is heavily reliant on the concept of the telegraph, that's not something you would easily guess from the outside, but it is.
All right, fair enough.
The wrinkle here is that this is being orchestrated by police officers, and it is established that the main thematic and political antagonism here is between the emerging new military force, right, which is a standing police army essentially, who represent the future and hence are armed with rifles and pistols, and the fading samurai class who are having their swords taken but are armed with swords and bows, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, I'm following.
Yeah, and that's an interesting like political dynamic on top of it, right?
Right.
But it does cast some it creates interesting complications, because we have not been shy about saying that samurai suck.
Oh yeah, no, they're cops.
They're like bad dudes. They're like old cops. Like, but also new cops also suck. They suck too.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's these guys suck.
I think the issue might be with the concept of police authority in general, but that's a broader discussion. We don't have to get into that now. What I'm curious about is, what is Tom Cruise's character play into this whole thing? Because it's my understanding that he's come over from you know, the New World, from America, to teach these samurai how to defend against guns.
Oh, well, there's no defending against guns. You can't.
Oh.
Yeah, you can't do that with a sword. You can't do that. You get shot and you die.
You know what? I seem to remember that from the end of The Last Samurai as well. I seem to remember they all got shot by guns.
You just get shot and you die. Like that's. And in fact, our main character has sort of at the beginning of the series, he has some pretty intense PTSD because during a battle, a bunch of people get shot and die. And he's like, oh, fuck. That scares the shit out of him, and it makes him kind of very reticent to draw his sword again. Because
yeah, no, it would.
Oh shit!
It would do that to me as well. I think a gun.
It's scary.
Would freak me. Guns are scary. It'd freak me the fuck out.
And now imagine you're seeing a gun for the first time, and it's mowing down everybody around you, and you don't even like. You're having a hard time even processing what is happening because like. You've been on a bunch of battlefields and mostly people are just hacking each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly people are blowing up. Holy shit. That's crazy. That's fucking crazy.
You know, I hate to keep bringing it back to Kenshin, but it reminds me of like one of the big dramatic culminations of one of the early arcs in Kenshin is like the super badass, like ninja, mystical ninja team. Just getting mowed down by a single dude with a gun and everyone like being freaked out and not knowing what to do. They're like, oh shit, he has a Gatling gun, run.
Yeah.
Ninja magic doesn't work against guns.
No, you just get shot. You get blasted, dog. You just get blasted. And that is a central tension of this show. I mean,
we have made fun of the concept in anime of just gun being a superpower.
Yes.
Like on par with others. But, you know, when you put it like this, it makes sense. Gun is the point and someone dies superpower.
Yeah. You know, that is one of the resentments and tensions in the show is, we do have this huge class of like I said, there's some like pretty battle action-y type samurai guys in here who are like mm-hmm. super swordsmen. And a few of them in particular are pretty fucking pissed that some guy can just shoot them in the head and doesn't have to like sword fight them. they're pretty mad about that.
I mean, it would piss me off as well. It's like basically using like aimbots in a shooter, you know, in an online shooter. It's like, hey, come on, man. That's just rude.
Yeah, it's not very fair.
I put in time and effort to, while you were learning guns, I was studying the blade.
Yeah, to no avail, because the blade can't beat a gun.
Yeah, it cannot beat a gun, ever.
So I really like that wrinkle. I like that. I like the fading samurai class versus the rising police force and mm-hmm. the... Not only are the political classes clashing as one fades and one rises, but the weapons that represent them are fading and rising as well, which I think is really interesting, especially for samurai stuff where a lot of people are just killing each other. It's a good focal point. And I also like that our main character pretty much understands that like samurai suck and they should go away, even though he is a samurai. He's given up that life because he wants to be a family man. So when other samurai bring up like, hey, let's have one last duel because we're samurai to the core and we should die on the battlefield. He's like, nah, dog.
No.
Like, I have a fucking kid and a wife, dude. Like, I have a real life. I'm not like some fucking blood junkie. I'm living, dude.
real facts.
And I like that. I like that a lot. He's spitting facts.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes him like truly sympathetic to me. Because it positions him in the exact center of both of these classes, because the police are resentful of the samurai because they're just like people who used to be able to just wander around killing people. And the police want to be those guys. They're like, we should be the only ones who can do that. They all need to die. Hence the battle royale, of course. And I like that there is this political intrigue on top of that, even though the show ends up kind of splitting the difference there, where we spend a lot of time with the political intrigue and the mystery surrounding like what is actually happening behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
which at some point you're kind of like, okay, I like this, but can we do another sword fight soon? Can we do some sword fights?
You never want to leave your audience asking for that. You know, you want to actually have the in-between parts between the sword fights actually feeding some kind of purpose. If your audience is getting bored waiting for what is essentially like the sugar of the show, not any of the vitamins, it's not the wholesome part, it's the sweetness, which can be fun, but like you want to build up to it. So if people are asking for just that, you're doing something wrong.
I don't mind it too much. I think they strike a pretty good balance, but there are times when you're like, okay, I would like to see some more stuff, because, and here's the most important part of the show and why anybody should watch it in the first place, considering how schlocky genre it is. The choreography is very good. It's,
well, thank God,
really good. It fucking whips.
Okay.
When they fight, it's cool. It's not bad. It is, in fact, good. And I watched this alongside Foundation, which I started watching kind of around the same time. And that show is goofy as hell and dumb as fuck.
I'm familiar.
And the fighting in Foundation is pretty, pretty sparse, but it is very bad. It is, in fact, very bad. the few action scenes in that show are not good. Foundation, that's the Apple TV show based on the Isaac Asimov series.
Oh, okay. All right. I have heard of that.
Yeah, Lee Pace is naked in it, like, a lot.
Does he hang dong?
They do not show it, but it is implied, yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Well, good for him.
It's fun. It's like, what if Dune was, like, a little bit more entertaining?
I don't know. I remember watching those live-action Kenshin movies, and they were fine for the most part, you know, from a neutral perspective. Technically, they were fine, but the fight scenes did err on being a little bit, I don't know, not flat, but inorganic in a way. So if you're saying that this show, Last Samurai Standing, it's got the juice for the fight scenes, like, I'm interested.
The fight scenes are very good. The choreography is very good. Like, man, it looks fucking great. Even if it was just fight after fight, like a more boring kind of cardboard cutout-y action samurai kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
If the choreography maintained that level, it would still be worth watching. Good shit. Good shit. I'm definitely gonna read the manga now, because the other downside of the show is that they made, like, 6 episodes. It is, like, not enough at all, and it has a hard ending. Like,
oh,
just
wow, they gave it they gave it the quarter season treatment.
Yes, they did. Then they do not even, like, they do not give us a soft landing. It is like some straight up JoJo to be continued shit.
Well, maybe that means that the rest is in production right now, or maybe they're just splitting it up. Netflix does that with a lot of their releases, where they'll,
I think it probably is. Because they obviously and like foresaw that this was going to be big. They hyped it up like crazy. Anybody on the production team probably knew they had the juice, because it just straight up looks good. And it's so easy to like, because it is just genre stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure more is coming soon, but I this is like full endorsement. This is good shit, man. This is good shit.
I'm definitely going to check it out.
I'll be checking that one out.
I'll be adding it to the list. Now, unless you have anything, any final thoughts that you want to say about this one, I do have some actual anime that I watched
would
like to talk about.
All right. I guess you can bring the actual anime to the
table. See, this isn't real anime, therefore you get no points. That's right. We're doing points on the show now. It's a new thing that we're trying out. Let us know what you think about it, but you're not getting any for that one, because that wasn't real anime. Now what I did was I watched some real ass anime, like some real ass anime. I watched Tatsuki Fujimoto's 1726.
Yes, of course.
Oh man. Now, have you read the collection of one shots that these are based off of?
Of course. They're great. I've read pretty much everything Fujimoto's done, I think. And these are no exception. I really, really like them.
I have some scattered thoughts about the whole thing. The first is, you know, I was watching through these, and the most notable thing about the whole production is that because each episode, each short, is directed by a different person with a different studio, we have a large array of different styles that they are adapting these stories into. Some of them not really, you know, trying too hard to stay that close to the original art style of Fujimoto, which is fine. You know, I've never had held that expectation for like direct adaptations
nor should you.
No, you know, we've said it over and over again. Adaptation should have a level of change that brings something new to it with the change in medium that you're presenting it in.
Yeah, adaptation should be transformative based on somebody's interpretive work. And if they can't bring anything to an adaptation, it's really more of a recitation, which tend to be pretty boring unless you're like extremely skilled at reproduction.
Right, right. Which
and of course, anthology style anyway means that like a bunch of different people are working on something and there's no way to be cohesive across that, as Star Wars Visions shows, for better or worse.
Well, yeah, I think that's actually a good comparison to what we're doing here, because like Star Wars Visions, this is not a cohesive production. This is, like I said, this is 8 different short films, all made by different production groups, all of them doing their own, you know, little takes and flares on Fujimoto's style.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that also means that there is a pretty wide gap in between, or in terms of production quality in between certain episodes and others, which I found kind of off-putting at first, because, you know, I want to say up front, story-wise, narratively, like, all of these are great. I love all of these stories. Fujimoto is, like, a very funny dude.
Yeah.
Like, I think people kind of forget that a lot of the time, because, like you said, when we were talking about the Chainsaw Man movie, he's kind of like that is his rock that he's chained down to for the time being. That is the moneymaker. And like when you let him just kind of go off and do his own weird little ideas and expand on them, this dude fucking cooks. He's the fucking man. I love this.
It's good shit.
And like I said, you know, people get bogged down with the action and aesthetic of Chainsaw Man and forget that he's like a really funny guy. He's a really funny writer. And I'm trying to remember a couple of them. You know, the first episode is called "A Couple Clucking Chickens Were Still Kicking in the Schoolyard," which is a story about two human survivors in a very, very recent, like, post-alien invasion where aliens have taken over Earth and have started eating everybody. But then it's also got this weird twist of the aliens are infatuated with Earth culture and so implant themselves, like, directly into the existing social structures of wherever they're invading. So we open in on a Japanese high school full of like freakish alien super mutant monsters in school uniforms going to class talking about how much they hate doing homework and how much they love eating humans, which I think is very funny.
Yeah.
And you know, we've got two human survivors that are pretending to be chickens by wearing chicken masks because aliens, like a Tyrannosaurus can only see movement. Aliens can only recognize humans by their head, like by their face. And so if you wear something over your head, you're basically invisible to them.
Yeah. You do Hotline Miami cosplay.
Yeah. That one is by far, like, I think in terms of animation, the best visually. It's doing this really cool adaptation of Fujimoto's style where it's very sketchy and kind of like messy, like he gets, you know, when he's like doing a lot of like really fast paced action stuff, like in Chainsaw Man or Fire Punch, and he gets like that really manic style about him. And it's just kind of accentuated with all of these giant rainbow pops of color everywhere. Absolutely beautiful, fluid action animation. Just really a pleasure to look at. I really like that one. And it's like a simple story. Humans, these survivors are trying to get back to another group of humans in the hills where they run away from aliens. And then when all hope seems lost, it turns out that one of the survivors is actually a rebel alien who is defending the humans against his fellow aliens. So kind of like a simple, I think it's, you know, I'm not super well versed in Ultraman, but I'm fairly certain there was more than one Ultraman reference in there. But I really like that one.
You're saying they're not all of
they're not
that,
all like that.
Of that
they're
quality.
Not all of that quality.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones, like the Mermaid Rhapsody, about a kid who plays an underwater piano to the delight of the mermaid population below, who want to eat him but won't eat him, so that, you know, he keeps playing the piano.
The water piano.
Well, that one almost kind of had like an Aesop fairy tale quality to it to me. You know, kind of like this melancholy kind of story resolution.
Yeah, it's actually riffing on a Satoshi Kon short story, actually, which I thought was interesting. Yeah,
there's
sort
cool.
of a similar like mermaid-y story that he wrote in one of his short story collections, maybe Fossil Dreams. Was that what it was called? But it is. I think there is a connection there, and I am fairly certain Fujimoto is a Satoshi Kon fan. I'm pretty certain.
You think so?
I think he might be a Satoshi Kon guy. I think so. I would imagine.
So like that one, unfortunately, I don't know what the deal was, but that was kind of very stiffly animated and had a very, they weren't trying to do his style at all. It was a very generic kind of like
off the shelf.
I don't know. Yeah. Off the shelf. It's an anime ass anime.
Yeah.
Kind of looking thing. So that was a bit disappointing. And there was also kind of heavy use of 3D modeling with the way the mermaids swam through the water. So that was a bit jarring. Same with Sasaki Stopped a Bullet, which in terms of like story was one of my favorites. I really like that one. That's it's about this kid who's kind of a loser, kind of a shut-in. He wants to be an astronaut when he grows up, but he's afraid of taking risk and moving forward with his own development. And out of nowhere, a dude with a gun busts into his class and threatens to kill everybody if the teacher doesn't have sex with him. And this kid kind of is just like, well, you know, if I'm going to die anyway, getting shot up by a lunatic, like I'm not just going to sit here taking it, you know, lying down. And so he, you know, starts talking off to this guy, and the guy shoots him and he catches the bullet in his hand. Just absolute baller move.
Yeah.
Again, if I'm shooting somebody up and I shoot them and they catch the bullet, that's super embarrassing for me. There's no coming back from that.
Yeah, that's not great. I mean, I would try a few more times just to make sure, you know, but like that is already, you're off to a bad start.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, what the fuck, kid? How'd you catch that bullet? And Sasaki is just kind of like, I don't know. I guess I'm from the future and I just know everything before it happens. And he's like, well, will you tell me my future? Like, am I screwed? He said, did I really fuck up here? He's like, yeah, you fucked up, but like, you're going to be fine. You know what? We're all going to be fine. In fact, everybody, let's just take a step back, take a breath, you know, recenter ourselves. We're all going to be fine. And you know what? They were.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a surprising little like burst of positivity in a lot of these stories. You know, I kind of tended to be on the darker, more like forlorn side, but always kind of brought it back at the end with a little, you know, upturn. You know, they're all of the, they're just these fun little parables that all have, you know, just, they just, I like all of their endings.
Yeah. It reminds me of a short story collection I read by the author of Takopi's Original Sin.
Uh-huh.
Called A Story Where Nothing Bad Happens.
And Nothing Bad Happens?
And Nothing Bad Happens. It's a very funny story. I mean, the twist, because there's always a twist in a short story. That's the point of short form narrative. The twist is that all the very bad stuff and lots of bad stuff has happened, but it all takes place way, way before the short story, which is just stuff that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is very nice.
So I'm not going to sit here and recap each episode. We don't have time for that, but I want to hit on one
Otherwise you would, right?
Yeah. Otherwise I absolutely would, but you would just recite all of them. I'm going to go into the hyperbaric chamber here. I'm going to suppress my power for training purposes. And I just want to hammer on one final point about this is going through all of these stories, and some of them were written, you know, prior, some much prior to the inception of Chainsaw Man. And you can see so much of him pulling ideas from all of these that he just straight up directly reuses in his other works, particularly Chainsaw Man.
Absolutely.
You know, the alien transformation design from a couple of chickens clucking in the yard that's just Chainsaw Man. You just replace the horns on the alien demon with chainsaws and that's him. You know, probably the biggest one is from Nayuta of the Prophecy, where the titular Nayuta just shows back up as a character in Chainsaw Man Part 2, almost completely the same. Man, I wish I had more time because I could talk a while about Woke Up as a Girl Syndrome, which I think was maybe my favorite out of all of these. And it was Tatsuki Fujimoto. Like we said about Silent Hill, he did a gender with this one. He's got some.
He did do a gender.
He's got some things to say and some spicy takes about that.
Sometimes I think he wants to do a gender more, but is a little afraid.
I wish he would.
I wish he would.
If this particular one could be expanded into like a whole 12 episode season, I would watch that. I was so intrigued
by what
he had to say.
It's been a while since I read the collection. So does that collection contain the story about the girl whose sister draws her naked and submits it to the school competition?
Yes. That is actually, that's the final episode
okay,
of 1726.
I also really like that one. That one's so funny.
It's really funny, you know, it takes a little bit of suspension of disbelief, you know, but I like that one. I thought it was very sweet, the relationship between these two characters and how the whole reason that one is fighting with the other is because of this nude portrait that's hanging in the school foyer.
In the translation I read, there's one panel where, you know, her classmates keep coming up to her and asking her questions like in the hall and stuff. And there's one panel where she, like a classmate is like, "So do you really look like that?" And her thought bubble is, "I want to kill."
Then that panel's in the episode.
Okay, good, because I love that one. It's so good.
Well, you know, I really like that bit in particular because they circle back to it at the end, because we have this joke of all of her classmates coming up to her and commenting about her naked body.
Yeah.
In this, like, you know, basically idolized version in the portrait of her up on the wall. And everyone's saying like, hey, are your boobs really that big in real life? Do your nipples actually look like that?
Yeah.
Which is mortifying. And then at the end, it kind of comes full circle when someone says, you know, she draws you like that because she looks up to you and she sees an idolized version, which I don't want to get into the implications of that, but I thought that was kind of a sweet sentiment if you think about it.
Sure.
You know, the wraparound is like, and then you think, you know, you think that she's going to take her revenge by drawing her sister naked back, right?
My revenge it turns out, portrait.
Yeah. Well, and then it turns, you know, the cap to the whole thing is that she owns it by drawing her own naked self-portrait and is like, hey, this is how you do it. I really like that one. That was also a really good story.
Yeah,
these are great, folks. You really gotta see these. These are probably some of the best things coming out of this season in particular.
So more good than bad then.
Absolutely. You know, that's what I was trying to say earlier is even the bad ones are still good. None of these were like bad. I did not feel like time wasted having watched any of these.
Okay, cool.
I just wish that they had all had the same level of like animation quality that some did. It was not consistent, but that is totally forgivable when the overall quality of all of these episodes is just through the roof. Go watch them. I really, really enjoyed these.
Hell yeah, man. Fujimoto just picking up dubs everywhere.
All right. I think that is going to do it for us this week, folks.
I got nothing else. Tank is empty.
Go watch that stuff. Check out Last Samurai Standing on Netflix or read the manga. Absolutely.
Okay, no, you don't have to do that. Don't pimp it.
What? No, we're getting paid. You didn't get that email?
Okay, listen. I will finish up Star Wars Vision season 3. We could talk about that next time. That's a very strange experiment that continues on. I will have some things to say about that, but I just want to make sure I've finished the last episode before we do that.
You know how I feel about Star Wars, but maybe they got something good to say. I don't know.
It's the best Star Wars. It really is. It is the best Star Wars.
A big hurdle to cross there. A big hurdle to get over. All right. That's it. Anime for the week. Go like, subscribe, check us
anime
out.
Anime for the week. Do that.
Do that.
Bye.
Bye.
No, you can't die of old age.